Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. That is the three-time Hall of Famer Chris Arnold.
Got you down.
My name is Alec Medford. James Tritely on the ones and twos with you. The Turn It On, Leave It On listener, we appreciate you hanging out with us here on a very scary-looking day after Christmas outside.
Is this London?
Here in the Metroplex. It looks like we're in Gotham City right
now.
Yeah,
really. Where's the bat signal?
Yeah.
Can't even see it.
It feels like it's really ominous. It feels like something bad is about to happen, and I don't know why.
Yeah, but it looks darker than like the morning. And we're not even talking about the middle of the day. We're talking about morning. It looks dark. But not only, I mean, it looks like it should be nighttime, like 8 o'clock in the evening or 9 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, it feels like I just woke up to do like a fill-in show on the mornings, you know, on a holiday or something. But here we are. It is 10 in the morning, and it is gross outside, but we made it here.
And by the way, it's not cold. For those who haven't stepped outside yet, it's not like in the 30s or the 40s. It's like almost 60.
Well, we made it here in one piece, and that's all that matters. We're going to hang out with you until 2 o'clock and give way to the G-Bag Nation, but just because it's the day after a holiday doesn't mean anything. We are still live and local for you. We're going to have some fun today, but we will be at Buffalo Wild Wings tomorrow.
Hey.
629 Staten Street in Fort Worth, right off of 7th Street. So if you're a partier, you know that area very, very well. Come out and see us West 10 to 2 side. Tomorrow. So excited for that. But for now, we are stuck here in this gloomy weather. And to go along with that gloomy mood, we can talk about what happened for the Dallas Mavericks yesterday. They lose 105-99 in what was an impressive comeback effort by the Mavericks, but that lead is going to get buried by the one that came out after the game, where you saw Luka Doncic exit the game early on with what looked to be a leg issue. He gets quickly ruled out with a calf strain and visible distraught energy from Luka. It looked like he wanted to rip that jersey off. He grabs it by the collar and gives it a squeeze. He wanted to tear that thing right off, but you could tell it was not good.
If the calf were a ref, it'd be in trouble right now.
This is true. And it was not a good sight to see him needing a little bit of assistance off the court. He needed to leave the arena on crutches thereafter. So we heard from Shams Charania of ESPN, still getting used to saying that, after the game, that he will miss an extended amount of time. No time frame, really, but he's going to get more testing done, and we will see the extent of the damage with that calf strain. But you saw what happens when you're without Luka. things looked a little bit different. You saw Julius Randle absolutely explode for Dallas the Timberwolves. Yep, Plano zone. He got to do it. He even said after the first quarter, did a little interview with ESPN. You know, you could see he wasn't looking at the reporter or anything. He's like, I'm looking at my mom as we speak. Yep. She's sitting front row. You know, so it was cool to see the homecoming, but I hate that it was at the expense of the Dallas Mavericks. Everything that could have went wrong did go wrong for the Mavericks, but like I said, they at least made it interesting at the end, because I was getting ready to, you know, lace up the shoes and go over to my aunt's house for the family Christmas there in about the middle of the third quarter, and I was like, yeah, this is done. This is absolutely done. And then
no.
I get to her house, and I'm like, oh man, it's a 6-point game.
Nobody told Kyrie that that it was done. No, that, in fact, this is what you have to look for the Dallas Mavericks, and we'll talk about them without Luka later, but had they went into the game thinking that Luka was not going to play, they probably would have beat Minnesota. Seriously, because they win without Luka. But one of the reasons that Luka was upset, he's very competitive anyway, but more importantly, he's very competitive on Christmas Day. For those who don't know, that was the 8th time that the Mavericks had played on Christmas, 3 times with Dirk, the last 5 times with Luka. Last year, it was in Phoenix, and guess what Luka did? 50. Mm-hmm. He hung half a 100 on the Suns, because then again, he owns the Suns, right? Especially Devin Booker. With that being said, he was talking about before the game, oh yeah, he's looking forward to this because everybody in Slovenia can watch it. The time change, it fits perfectly. It's like nighttime viewing for the people, his fans in Slovenia, his family. And then he gets hurt going into halftime. I mean, this was like, he was really, really upset. But the Dallas Mavericks, as they were trying to figure out and find themselves, because the first half was pretty competitive. They were behind most of that part, but they were still like right there within, you know, 9 or 10 points. Third quarter, the T-Wolves just exploded. And it wasn't just Ant-Man and it wasn't just Julius Randle. They were just doing all kinds of things. And the Mavericks were just bricking. They were getting the shots that they wanted. They just weren't dropping until Kyrie said, let me take over this thing. He takes over the fourth quarter, winds up with 39 points. And by the way, Klay Thompson in this game, he broke past Reggie Miller for the 5th spot all-time, 3 scored. He had 2 of them in the first quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, he hit the one that broke the record. And of course, there's a little salute for him afterwards, after a timeout, not stopping the game for him, but afterwards in the timeout, giving his love and the whole 9 yards. And, you know, the Mavericks had all this momentum and Minnesota wasn't scoring anything, but they had a lead that had gone up to 28 points and the Mavericks chopped it down to 2 points with like a minute left to play, less than a minute to play. They just couldn't get the stop that they needed. Ant-Man got a off the glass bank shot in and the Mavericks bricked, and then they fouled Julius Randle. He hit the last 2 shots and unfortunately, everybody went home disappointed, but they did have a wild ride, which leads us to Luka.
It does, and just a little bit more on the end of that game. The last like 4 minutes or so was some of the most intense, crazy, nonsensical basketball that you're going to see in a while, and maybe all season for the Dallas Mavericks. Like, that was so competitive. They opened up the fourth quarter with a 31-11 run.
Exactly. It was all Kyrie. He was leading the whole charge, but then all those shots they were taking in the third started dropping.
Mm-hmm. And that leads to a bigger topic that I feel like comes up this time every year, really for most teams, but especially it feels like the Dallas Mavericks and just overall shot selection. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of people were kind of rubbed the wrong way by maybe some shots that Kyrie was taking late in the game too, like a late 3-pointer when all you needed was a 2-point bucket to even up the game.
Let me say this, because for those who don't know, there's a strategy inside the strategy. He threw up that shot, a 3, because he was trying to get closer or get somebody else open, but in their minds, they wanted to have 2 possessions. You follow
sure.
what I'm going?
Yeah.
It's like you don't want Minnesota to run the clock out on 24 seconds. So he jacked it up because they wanted to have 2 more possessions.
So there was a lot going on there that ended up leading to a 6-point loss and what should have probably been more like a 16-point loss.
Easily.
With the way that they played throughout most of the game. And without Luka, what does it look like for all we know right now is, quote, an extended amount of time from Shams and Tim McMahon, who reported it for ESPN.
And Tim was at the game.
And what does that look like to you going forward? Who does that Who needs to step up in his absence? Who's going to get more minutes? A lot of people talking about Najee Marshall coming back from that upper respiratory infection. Mm-hmm. Maybe they start asking a little bit more from him since he has been so good handling the basketball. Quentin Grimes is going to get mm-hmm. probably some extended time with the ball in his hands mm-hmm. as a primary ball carrier, which you saw at the end of Luka's last absence. He did really well. So compared to years past, the Mavericks are in a lot better position to handle this. What scares me is it is an extended amount of time. Without your superstar on the floor for who knows how long, you are going to put up, inevitably, a couple of pretty bad games. You can see it coming from a mile away, but the depth that they have built on this roster in a matter of months this past offseason, I think equips them better to hang in there and keep them competitive there inside the top of the West until he comes back, and then they can really shore things up. And, you know, you hear like Jerry Jones say it all the time, I'd rather have this injury happen, you know, in the first quarter of the season than the last quarter in mm-hmm. the playoffs. So get this out of the way, and now you can really see what that depth looks like behind him.
In fact, a lot of people, and we totally understand a lot of people for, you know, basketball, they don't pay attention to it till Christmas itself. It's like they're paying attention to football.
Sure.
Mavericks this season, outside of the game where Luka and Kyrie both did not play, this is the first game against the Clippers last week, they're 6-1 without Luka. 6-1. When he first hurt his wrist, I knew that they would have a winning record because the depth is there. And you also got to look at what everybody's always complained about the Mavericks and Luka, which is his usage rating. He's on the floor too long. He, you know, dominates the ball too much. Well, guess what? You're able to see what this team can do when you don't have to have him dominate the ball to win the games. So, in other words, those days of Luka having to have a triple-double and have the ball in his hands the whole time and to tie up the clock and he moves at his own pace and that's the only way they can win, those days are long gone. This season changed all of that narrative, and I expect the Dallas Mavericks to actually thrive. And you will hear crazy stories that make no sense about, well, they don't really need Luka. Yeah, they do. And you definitely need him in the playoffs. And what you want him to do is be fresh in the playoffs. You're talking about coaches saying, or Jerry Jones even saying, I'd rather a player get hurt in the first part of the season than the end. It especially applies to Luka. That run they made to the finals last year, people kind of forget Luka was injured during that entire run. And again, this calf injury he's going through now, he's been dealing with this calf for 2 years now. So again, I was saying this in the crosstalk. If Luka were to have an injury, I was praying that it wasn't Achilles. I was praying that it wasn't some kind of knee like overshown. And, you know, you just never know, especially with players around the NBA just getting hurt all this part of the year. So with all that being said, I expect not just Q. Grimes to step up. I'm expecting Spencer Dinwiddie to step up, which he did. And all these guys, you say, well, can they step up? They've done it. You might not have been paying attention, Maverick fans or sports fans, because you're paying attention to the soap opera, which is the NFL, and we understand all that. So as you try to come up with a new narrative, the last you checked on the Dallas Mavericks was last season when you didn't think the coach knew how to coach and the GM knew how to find talent and Luka and Kyrie can't get along and Luka's just going to leave. Those things disappeared. So catch up with the rest of the world. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. If you love sports, you're going to catch up. You will catch up. But find out that this is going, in fact, to show you how good the Mavericks were without Luka, there are people who are doing this hypothetical. Was Luka really hurt, or did he just need to see how this team can play without him? I mean, that's how good they play without him. That's all I'm saying.
Something that I'm going to keep an eye on, because I thought this was a fun little case study while he was out with the wrist injury. The Mavericks quietly moved up to 7th in the NBA mm-hmm. in pace of play. Ever since his return, they have dropped back down to 12, which is still in the better half of the league. Mm-hmm. But noticeably, when you watch the game and when you look at the numbers, the pace of play with Luka slows down.
Yep.
And we all know that. That's been the story of his game. It's not necessarily a bad thing either. That's right. Just how he plays the game. I'm intrigued to see if they climb back up because they're trying to play with a little more tempo, trying to score early, trying to score often.
Exactly.
So that might...
And the defense is a notch better.
Exactly. So the game plan obviously is going to change without him. I want to know if that means faster basketball, which Maybe you could see more 39-point performances from Kyrie Irving. You could see more 20-plus-point explosions from a Quentin Grimes just because they are pushing the ball up and down the court a lot faster. So that's something that I'll be interested to see. I hope they do because I think that leads to wins for the Mavericks with this roster. If you told me that last year, I didn't think that exactly amounted to anything.
Totally
that didn't
agree.
Really change my mind. With the personnel they have now, I think pushing the pace does work. So I hope that's going to be the case going forward.
To show you how good and how deep this Mavericks team really is, buddy of mine named Bob, he also loves sports. He talks sports all the time. He said, I think this roster is good enough because of the depth. If they were their own team outside of Luke and Kyrie, they could make the playoffs. They would be a play-in because they're that good and they're that balanced. So, again, the Mavericks record's going to be okay. Luka is probably not going to be in the MVP conversation unless his second half is just so off the charts, which I doubt because it's such a he wants to win a ring. He doesn't care about the MVP as much as a ring. So he wants to make sure the team is as good as it can be around him for the playoffs. And they need him to be right for the playoffs with less miles on him. So it's a curse and a blessing.
It's the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's do some NFL overreaction or reality. NFL, should you just stay in your lane? We'll talk about that next year on The Fan. Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan, we're going to get into some NFL overreaction or reality here in just a moment. And coming up on the other side, how a junior college ruling could impact the world of Major League Baseball. A really fun conversation that I'm looking forward to. But we did have all of the Christmas games yesterday. We will break those down more in depth during Gridiron Gravy. That's going to be at 11 o'clock today because Mike McCarthy will be speaking at about 11:15. So our Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnuolo, will join us at 11:40 instead. So we'll break those games down at length here in a little over half an hour. But I've got some questions to ask you, boys, and we are going to start with one. Even though it is NFL overreaction or reality, this is actually based off of a question or a comment, rather, made by LeBron James. After the Lakers game yesterday on Christmas Day, he had this to say.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you, and thank you for another gift on Christmas.
Oh, absolutely. Merry Christmas to my family back home. I'm coming home, and I love the NFL. I love the NFL, but Christmas is our day.
I love the NFL, but Christmas is our day. So 877-881-1053, the Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorneys text line to get involved. NFL overreaction or reality? The NFL should stay out of the NBA's lane and should have never done Christmas Day games.
Too late. You can't go back. The NFL is the most dominant league in all of sports outside of soccer worldwide. And they do what they want to do, and they have proven that they can. And it's not just about television ratings. It's about streaming rights. It's the whole nine yards. It's the big dog. And unfortunately for the NBA, the NFL decided to take some of their talents to Christmas. A lot of people, I was saying this last segment, they never pay attention to the NBA until Christmas anyway because they're so busy watching football. Well, guess what? NFL is so bold and so big. They're doing Saturdays now. They're doing Christmas Day. They're doing Friday night sometimes against high school football. They're doing whatever the F they want to do. And LeBron, if you were a younger guy, it might have made a difference. You probably got two or three years left, son. Yeah, son.
James, are you in or out on NFL Christmas Day games?
Well, I was watching it yesterday, and I was like, you know, the last time we saw live events on Netflix, the entire thing seemed to have crashed. So that
Mike
was
Tyson.
The first thought.
And
is,
you saw butt cheeks.
Right, yeah. And, you know, two things. Well, some people would argue those were butt cheeks type of games yesterday. But at the same time,
that's true.
I will say I did enjoy kind of the different Christmas Day festivities. Obviously, NBA has been huge on Christmas Day. But give us some, you know, everybody loves football during the fall and winter. Give us a little more variety. I'm not mad at it.
See, I'm going to say that this is overreaction, that the NBA just owns Christmas Day sports programming. I'm all for having more sports on days that I am not working. Because what do I like to do in my free time? Watch sports. And I feel like that's a lot of Americans, is whenever you have the family around and you have all the kids running around and everything, what is your one escape? Sitting down and watching some sports, no matter what it is. The NHL could have played yesterday and I would have been all in on whatever games. I wish they did too.
The NHL said, let's stay in our lane. They didn't even have games on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
And to your point, CA, where, you know, it is too late and everything. That's why I'm just saying they are asking that they should have never done it. The reason that it was going to happen eventually, and even if you just want to broaden that spectrum a little bit, the whole experiment on Netflix was going to happen. The NFL got an extra $150 million in additional TV money just from making that Netflix deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix, in turn, makes a bunch of that money back, if not more, and profits off of it because they can sell ads for six figures. And they have, it's Netflix, they have their own original program. You saw a whole section during the Steelers game of people dressed up like Squid Games characters promoting the show, which, guess what, comes out today.
Mm-hmm.
So literally the next day, the show that they're promoting is coming out. So it makes more sense than not to try this thing out. And they hired CBS's production crew to run the game. So they had CBS commentators like Nate Burleson, Ian Eagle, so on as JJ Watt. They had him in the booth, but they're also running ads for CBS broadcasts and CBS TV shows. So the NFL benefits from this in so many ways, more than just one. And one more nugget about that. Netflix says that viewers from over 200 countries tuned in to Chiefs versus Steelers, and nearly one third of all active Netflix viewers during that time window were watching that game.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people.
And to show you about a lot of people and eyeballs and clicks and streams or whatever you use as metrics, this is not a coincidence that Beyonce did a halftime. We're going to talk about that halftime a little bit later in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But just know this. It was in Houston, where she's from. They were calling it the Beyonce Bowl because the Beehive is worldwide. We're talking about her fans. It's kind of like the Kansas City Chiefs are not mad that Taylor Swift is a fan of their team and her boyfriend plays tight end. Beyonce, if she says, hey, I would do a halftime, can't be a Super Bowl halftime. Well, Christmas Day, that's big. And guess what? I'm in my own hometown of Houston. I can get my part out of it, just like CBS and cross-promote. It just was a win-win-win all the way across because there are people who didn't care about football at all, including all the women in my family. It's the Beyonce Bowl. I said, what's the Beyonce Bowl? You mean you don't know? I wasn't aware, but I found out.
NFL overreaction or reality? Russell Wilson should not return as the Steelers quarterback next season.
I'm thinking it's an overreaction. I think people are saying that because they're like, oh, well, he's just like Kirk Cousins. But guess what? He had a history of being bad in Denver. I think the bad in Denver thing was his own fault, but at the same time, I don't think it was totally skill-related. I think it was a power trip-related thing. And so him with Pittsburgh, you can't erase what he did when he took over for Fields. With that being said, he's not coming off of injury like Kirk Cousins. He's not – he's older, but guess what? There's a lot of older quarterbacks. I don't think he's done, and I don't think he shouldn't not take another snap. They've lost three straight games, but guess what? It's not all on him.
The Steelers played three games in 11 days, all three of those against teams with 10-plus wins. The offensive numbers weren't good, but neither was Russ. Pittsburgh averages just 280 yards per game with 13 offensive points per game over those past three games, all with Wilson at quarterback, obviously. He completed just 64% of his passes for 550 yards with three touchdowns to two interceptions and an 82.2 rating. He's also taken 10 sacks and has just a 73.3 passer rating when facing the blitz during that three-game skid. So he's under heavy pressure.
Mm-hmm.
He's not making good decisions with the football, which you saw one of those interceptions he threw yesterday over the middle into the back of the end zone into double coverage when George Pickens was wide open in single coverage on the left side of the field because the safety read Wilson's eyes and went to center field and intercepted the pass. So if you watch the games, you see some where you say, like you were saying, okay, I get it. He was under duress, whatever. But then there's some really ugly decisions, and he's just holding the ball a lot longer because he still thinks that he is Russell Wilson of Seattle. He thinks that he can evade all of that. he can't move the way he used to.
Exactly. In fact, McCourty, one of the McCourty twins who does the broadcasting now, a couple of years ago, he was explaining why Russ isn't dangerous anymore. And he says he doesn't extend plays with his legs anymore, and he takes too many sacks instead of just getting rid of the ball. And you just nailed it.
From the 817, they need to play Jaylen Warren as running back one, though, too. Harris is washed. And I think I think that's why they probably declined that fifth-year option on Harris, too, is because they know that we got what we could out of him. We need to get ready to move on, and I think Warren will see a chance at least to be that guy because that fifth-year option is declined on Najee Harris, and he's going to be gone soon.
His was so wild. No one saw Pittsburgh being this good a month ago. You follow where I'm going with this? It was like, okay, that division's the toughest division in sports. Now we find out it's the NFC North, not the AFC North. But still, Baltimore, you already knew, they just added Derrick Henry. Oh, they got to be the favorite. Wait a minute. Guess what? You got a couple of other teams that are always there and looking good. And Pittsburgh just added Russ. Well, wait a minute. They got Fields, too. That team's not going anywhere. And guess what? They started going somewhere. So it's where's the bar? What is the expectation level?
Sticking with the Steelers, because it is Kevin Hagelin's favorite team, it is well documented. Mike Tomlin should be let go as the head coach of the Steelers after this year.
Does he win too much?
Overreaction or reality? I bring this up because I saw lots of fans on Twitter yesterday and even some local media out in Pittsburgh screaming for his job after yesterday's game.
His was so crazy. The man doesn't have a losing season. We know that. Nobody likes a 500 league. He's already won a Super Bowl. We already know that. You know what? The teams that would snatch him up in a minute. Again, sometimes the squeaky wheel gets the most noise. That doesn't represent everybody. It definitely doesn't represent the entire organization. And imagine what you don't know what he does. The culture in that locker room. You didn't know about Antonio Brown till he left, did you? That's all I got to say.
James, how do we feel about Mike Tomlin?
I mean, if you're going to think about letting go such a legendary coach and that, you've got bigger problems to worry about. I mean, you see time and time again. And again, there's multiple instances where we've seen Pittsburgh not have a successful season. But do we still believe in Mike Tomlin as a head coach? Abso-freaking-lutely. There's nothing. He's going to go down as one of the greatest coaches in the game. I mean, he's kept that job for a reason. They're not just having him around just to be like, well, we don't want to, you know, get rid of a household name. No, he's good for a reason. He's in that position for an exact reason.
And you see that the locker room has his back no matter what. He is a true leader of men. I mean, in a weird way, it's almost like they're the AFC's Cowboys because you hear the same things. You know, the outside noise calling for the job of the head coach, but everybody in that building is so blatantly dedicated to him, and they are in love with the idea of keeping him as their head coach because they believe in him. They believe the vision, and I will say that I feel like their front office in general is not the best. I don't think they help him out. They kind of, just like the Cowboys, they help him be good enough, and that's it. They don't do anything else. Like, they don't develop the quarterback. What do? They go and get Justin Fields for cheap, and they get Russell Wilson for cheap, and they say, well, we got options here. They were doing, almost in training camp, quarterback by committee, which we talk about here all the time with our running back situation in training camp. If you ever say anything blank by committee,
you are
setting yourself up for failure. Before day one, even the sun rises on day one of the NFL season, you are setting yourself up for failure. So I think that he has done nothing wrong. If anything, I think it's more of an indictment on the front office.
Yep. And think about this. Name the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback that followed behind Ben Roethlisberger all the way to Russell Wilson. Think about it.
They had a dude named Duck.
And they've never had a losing record. They've made it to the playoffs most of the time. And by the way, Tolo's texting in, my voice is hoarse. I'm not sick at all. I don't feel bad at all. I've just been talking on the radio every day and doing Maverick games at night and Cowboy games and stuff. So I'm just hoarse.
I want to bring up a point about going back to the Russell Wilson thing. Remember, like, before the season started, you and I had a show, and we talked about how none of us should pay attention to Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, and now Russell Wilson is looking so successful with this team.
Mm-hmm.
He's just looking a ton better than I think a lot of people predicted. We're like, well, you know, you have 1A, 1B and Russ and Fields, but now you look at everything, and Russ looks like he can be a consistent quarterback and try and get the job done.
From the from the 214. This is great. You're going to like this, CA. Talking about the Najee Harris thing, they said, please don't talk about washed-up running backs with no contract coming on this station. Jerry's going to hear that, and he's going to go looking for them this offseason. Yeah. Washed-up running backs, they have nothing left to give. Give them that one-year deal. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. Him and Rico Dowdle going to tear the league down. There you have it. NFL overreaction or reality right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, no Mike Bacsik today, but we are going to talk some baseball because there's a junior college ruling that might and probably will impact the game of baseball at the collegiate and major league level. We'll talk about that next here on the KNC Masterpiece.
Langford stays right in the box, waiting at 3-2. The set by Holmes and the payoff pitch swung on and a deep drive to left. That ball is way, way back. That ball is history. A walk-off slam for Wyatt Langford.
A recent college football ruling against the NCAA could end up having a sizable impact on the future of college baseball and potentially players like you just heard, Wyatt Langford. Players of his caliber might have bigger decisions to make coming out of college. We'll get into that here in just a moment. 877-881-1053. That is the Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorneys text line to get involved with the conversation here. Interested to see what you guys think of what could happen here with college baseball. We'll dip into some gridiron gravy to open up hour number two of the program, but I don't get to do this often, so we're going to do it because Mike isn't here. It's time for Baseball Nuggets.
With Alec Medford.
I can kind of understand why Mike is the way he is because there's almost like an ego boost that comes with that. Thrown into the intro. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel powerful now. I like this.
You know who came up with that intro for him? Because you know he didn't do it by himself. Mm-hmm. He didn't even request it. Hmm. Lucius.
Sounds about right.
Back from the G-Bag Nation days.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into this for Baseball Nuggets today, as Mike would say, brought to you by nobody. Kylie McDaniel, ESPN, she spoke with about a dozen executives across Major League Baseball and college baseball about a court ruling that was made last Wednesday. A federal judge in Tennessee granted an injunction to Vanderbilt quarterback Diego Pavia, friend of the morning show here on 105.3 The Fan, allowing him to pursue another year of NCAA eligibility. That means a college athlete's time in junior college does not count toward the overall years of NCAA eligibility. So if this is upheld, this would mean that a player who spends 2 years at a junior college could start his NCAA career as a freshman with 4 years of eligibility left instead of the current two.
No matter what his age.
No matter the age. So that means a potential six-year collegiate sports career for a lot of people just right off the rip. That's not counting red shirts, medical red shirts, any kind of stuff, you know, forbid we were to have another pandemic that would, you know, add another red shirt year. You could see some really old baseball players in college. And just, you know, athletes in college overall. So I wanted to dive into this a little bit because when we were talking before the show, Choppy brought this up during Crosstalk on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And I saw this article right after and did a little bit of reading into it. And it was interesting to see the breakdown that McDaniel made here on ESPN. And she did like a hypothetical, you know, breakdown of what it would look like college year one at age 19, age 20 at college year two. It's really, really interesting. And what would change for the players, for the programs, and for the actual pro baseball teams. So for somebody coming out of high school at age 18, she has this scenario built out. Let's just say they turn down a low six-figure signing bonus in the draft out of high school. They go to college year one at age 19. They don't have a starting spot at the Power Four school that he committed to in high school. And instead of playing part-time, asks for a redshirt season to preserve his eligibility. At age 20, college year two, player then moves to JUCO where he starts making progress as a prospect with everyday reps. College year three, age 21 already, the player's progression continues and commits to a mid-major college during his second year of JUCO. College year 4, 22 years old. The player is a redshirt freshman and has a great year at mid-major school.
22 years old.
At 23, year 5 of college, the player transfers to an SEC school as a sophomore at age 23 and gets a $100,000 plus NIL package.
Can we name this the player Stetson?
Stetson.
As we kind of go along?
Yeah, and that SEC school we mentioned there in this hypothetical was Georgia.
Okay.
So, college year 6, Stetson is age 24, returns / transfers to SEC school as a junior and does the same exact thing at age 25, college year 7, as a senior. There are other scenarios, such as a post-grad year after high school, a junior college redshirt, a medical redshirt, etc., that would mean we could one day see a player celebrating his 30th birthday while still playing college baseball.
Stetson, working that system.
Yeah, just go sell used cars at this point. But one of the key points here...
What, and give up his dream?
Would be... The dream died a long time ago, my brother. The game
You're
passed
not in the
by.
Majors by age 30.
Yeah, the game forgot you. One of the key points here would be you would have to incentivize players to consider this path that they would be draft eligible nearly every season of their college career. This opens up that opportunity to leave for the pros when their stock is the highest, since MLB rules allow for players to be drafted after each season at a junior college or in a college season where they turn 21 years old by August 1st. So in the current system, players often have to decide taking what is offered to them as a high school senior, maybe like a mid low draft pick with a decent signing bonus, or if they are really talented, you know, you see some like these Jordan Walrers and whatnot that come out of high school and they get a massive offer up front, but they're going to be stuck in the minor league system for probably a while. You're talking
and
like
not making much money.
Yeah, upwards of 3 to 4 years. And, you know, the signing bonus is nice. You get all of that up front and they live off of that. But the everyday like
reps,
earnings of said minor league system, not great. Like you said, living on a bus pretty much your entire minor league career.
And, you know, did that for a while.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people, you know, they've done more in recent history, like some of those agreements that they made with Major League Baseball to where, you know, they have to get better accommodations and whatnot. But still, it's not as nice as getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, to play in college where you've got the fancy clubhouse setups and you're not playing as often. So it's less wear and tear on the body, preserving your health and whatnot, especially for pitchers. So you could actually see them every start going 9 innings, you know, and flashing some real incredible stuff. Whereas, you know, in the minor league system, they're getting a lot more work, but in front of less people, in front of less eyeballs, and for less money. So for the college programs, junior college baseball would see the biggest immediate impact with this change, as it is not a real path to pro baseball right now. Just that's the sad truth about junior college. You go there to start. You go there to get a platform and hopefully jump up to a mid-major, hopefully jump up to an SEC school. And in
fact, you're creating tape.
Exactly. And over the past 5 MLB drafts, how many first-round picks do you think have been selected directly out of junior college in the past 5 MLB drafts?
Not that many.
One. There has been one first-round pick in the past 5 MLB drafts right out of JUCO. And there's only been one second-round pick and 3 third-round picks directly out of the JUCO ranks. So it's more common to see them transfer from JUCOs to 4-year colleges, then go early in the draft. But that is still seen as a secondary path at best. The feedback that McDaniel got from MLB scouts and college coaches on what this means for the 4-year schools showed that the ramifications would also be felt all the way up to the highest levels of D1 baseball. The top schools would have rosters featuring a mix of top draft prospects of a typical college age and quote-unquote professional collegiate players in their mid to late 20s, with the latter shuffling in and out nearly every season. So it would almost look like a real pro team at the top of Division I baseball, where you have the young guys that are actually of the age that you expect them to be when you say they're a sophomore, when you say they're a freshman, when you say they're a junior. They're in their early 20s at best. But then every year you're going to start getting this rapid turnaround of guys in their mid to late 20s on college teams that they might stay for one season and one season only, one and done it, and then go to Major League Baseball.
One and done. This is the exactly opposite thing that Kentucky does. Well, when Coach Cal was there, one and done for high school freshmen. They were AAU guys. He said, "Hey, come here for 1 year, Kentucky, and we can get you into the league." And so this is a different kind of thing, but it's 1 year. Come over here, and we can get you into Major League Baseball without having to go through the minors.
So she texted, texted with a scout that about the Diego Pavia thing and said the NCAA just got a minor league is what they got back from a scout and saying, quote, the SEC will just be big draft guys and 26-year-olds, pretty much. Yeah. So you could see a world where the NCAA, like sports in general, but especially baseball, because the path to the majors is not so linear compared to the NFL, compared to the NBA, where you kind of already have that with college basketball, the one and done nature of everything. Right. You're going to see a lot more old dudes like dudes that probably have families,
of
dudes
course.
That
Keep
need to be
real.
Thinking about starting
not
a family.
Not just Mormons anymore. So, there's a lot of kids going to BYU who are Mormon. They're doing their mission and they come back with all these wives and kids and stuff. Notice I said wives and kids and stuff. Not no more. Just kidding. Back in the day, they could have more than one.
So there you have it. This is going to be a interesting state for college baseball specifically. It's gonna ripple throughout the other sports. I mean, the reason this is happening is because of a quarterback, so football. But the biggest impact is probably going to be felt through baseball, and it won't be an overnight thing.
Right, so, it's going to be over time, but it'll probably be quicker than we expect.
There you have it. That's some baseball nuggets right here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's take a trip around the entire NFL and dip into some gridiron gravy where we had Christmas football and, of course, Beyonce. Next on The Fan.